This is Mark Steiner, and that's Buffy St. Marie singing Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. On this day in 1975, two FBI agents were, and a member of the American Indian Movement, are killed in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Leonard Peltier was accused of that murder. He's still in jail. And this is a song that we remember on this day in history that Buffy St. Marie wrote in honor of that moment, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. And we are reminded, we're coming back to Baltimore here for our discussions about what's happening in our city with our youth and jobs. We are, I'll introduce my guest in a moment. As I tell you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to our website at steinershow.org and click on MeQ, Baltimore's credit union's banner. It's right there. So in the first part of our program, as we look at what some people are saying is a crisis, some people are saying is a problem we can resolve about getting jobs for our youth in Baltimore, we have with us Donald Fry. Donald Fry, of course, is president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee, chair of the Hire One Youth Leadership Team, former member of the Maryland House of Delegates and Maryland State Senate. Don, welcome. Good to have you back. It's been a while.
Great. Thanks to be on, Frank. Paul again.
Yes. And Karen Sitnick is with us. Karen Sitnick is director of the Mayor's Office of Employment and Development. Karen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And in the studio is Ernest Dorsey, Assistant Director for Youth Services at the Mayor's Office of Employment Development. And Ernest, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. We have a situation where it started out where 11,000 young people wanted jobs in the city. 8,600 of those kids qualified. We'll talk about what that means, that nuance of that. And 5,000 jobs are there, which means that we have a total of maybe 6,000 kids who wanted jobs but are not going to have jobs this summer, of the ones we know from the very beginning of the process, or 3,600 if you take away the ones that didn't apply officially. So, Donald Fry, let me start with you. So that seems like, in some ways, if you're in the community looking out, looking for a job as a crisis, what do you think is going on and where do you think we have to go?
Well, you know, obviously, Mark, I think the important thing is that there are many young people who are looking for employment opportunities.
Right.
And I think that those of us in the business community need to recognize that, and do recognize that it's significant to provide opportunities where appropriate and through programs that are very successful. And that's one of the major reasons that we've gotten behind the Hire One Youth campaign. There was an initiative of Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake to actually match up very young, talented people who have career ambitions and goals with companies that are in areas of comparable interest to those students.
And so, Karen, I'll talk a bit about that. I mean, but could you just talk to us as head of the Mayor's Office of Employment Development, what happened between the 11,000 kids who originally wanted to apply and now what we see is maybe perhaps 4,500 jobs that are available? What happened within that arc? What either went wrong, what were we missing, and what happened?
Well, I think what you're seeing is, you know, an interest that young people initially have. They say, I want to work. I think I'm going to work. So you've got 11,000 kids who start the process. Between that and the number of young people then who follow through, you know, gather all the documents that we need if we're going to pay them. Obviously, they need to have Social Security cards. You need to have certain things that they need to bring and interview. So that goes from 11,000 to the 8,000. And then, of course, you know, there's a reality factor on how many jobs we are able to create ourselves with the funding that we get. But keep in mind that there are other job opportunities that don't necessarily get funneled directly through the Youth Work Summer Jobs program. So young people are encouraged, and we give them tips. If we can't place them ourselves, here are places where you can go that employers are hiring that don't necessarily come through our program. So I think the picture is broader than what we're talking about in terms of the youngsters that we actually physically connect to a summer job.
So one of the things I'm going to come back to Don Fry and talk about the business community and what's happening inside the business community, and also come back with Canada to talk a bit about more about what you said.
Mm-hmm.
But is part of the problem, has part of the problem been, Ernest Dorsey, that of these 11,000 kids in the very beginning, that the 8600 came in with their documents, the ones that did not, is that many of these kids either, A, don't have the documents, don't have the parental support, don't know really what to do to get them. And is that maybe part of what we have to overcome as well? Because there's so many kids who really just don't have access to the documents we're talking about because of all kinds of issues.
I think it's a combination of all of what you just indicated. In addition to, as Karen said, some young people start the process and change their minds. Some young people start the process and may have gotten a job on their own, so they no longer need the Mayor's Office of Employment Development Assistance. And yes, there are young people who perhaps need those documents and realize that they don't have them and may not have parental support to get some of those documents, whatever.
So, Donald Fry, when you talked about the program that you're helping to chair, the Hire One Youth Leadership Team, what is there inside the business community a kind of, maybe I'm asking a question honestly and straight up because I just don't know. Is there a disconnect between some people in business not understanding, A, the needs, but also the skills of these kids and what they can bring to the table as an economic development tool as opposed to just looking at this, well, I'm just having charity to give some inner-city kid a job? I mean, is there a disconnect here that has to be overcome within the business community itself, do you think?
I don't know that there's a disconnect, Mark. I think, in fact, the business community has been supportive for many years, financially and otherwise, of programs, just the Youth Works program in Baltimore City that hires a number of youth for summer employment. But I think that there is a need to really take the opportunity to try to target those young people who have specific career interests into companies that are in those areas that can provide opportunities for the students to see what they may need to focus on to really have a career in that area, and also gives an opportunity for business to comment as to any areas of strength that need to be identified or areas of improvement that need to be done with the young people. So I think this is the Hire One Youth is a unique program because it targets a certain number of young people who have specific career ambitions and goals in businesses in those areas. But I think the business may recognize the importance of summer employment, but the mayor has made the Hire One Youth program one that is not a certainly not for charity, but for something for truly a job improvement and opportunity.
So I guess what I'm trying to get to, I get to understand, Karen, is next year's a guest coming in, we'll talk a bit about this as well. But and for people reading the newspapers, is what's missing here for us? I mean, well, what is missing, and how do you fill the gap and make it work? When let's just say you take the number of 8,600 kids that do qualify, mm-hmm. and 5,000 jobs. Now we're saying we're down to 4,500 jobs, and we're talking about $1,000, or whatever that number is per summer per kid. What's missing? How does that hole get filled? What's this bridge we have to cover?
Well, you know, that's a question, Mark, that I think we've been asking ourselves. You know, every year that we struggle with making sure that we are doing everything we can to create as many opportunities as possible. You might recall that in many years prior to this current legislation we're working under, the federal government provided a lot of money for us to have standalone summer jobs programs. That funding, which was very significant because it paid the wages of young people and opened doors that perhaps employers or even nonprofits were a little bit hesitant to take young people on if they had to pay the wages, those dollars went away in 2000. And it left many cities and many communities across the country left with deciding they're going to work really hard to create opportunities or they're not. And unfortunately, and I'm talking on a national level, mm-hmm. unfortunately, there are many communities and cities that do nothing to create summer employment opportunities for their young people. So the struggle is, you know, making sure that we have enough resources to meet the need. And then in addition to the fiscal resources, making sure that we have really good work experience opportunities for our young people. And that's as important as the funding, because the last thing we want to do is put a young person in a work site where it's really not a good experience. I mean, if you're a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old, that's your first kind of aha about work. And if it's not good, there isn't a good worksite supervisor who's going to guide you, and the work you're doing isn't helping you learn how the workplace works, then it can be a negative situation. So not only do we work hard to create enough resources to pay the wages for young people, but we're very careful as well about ensuring that where we make the match with young people, it's a good one, which is why the Hire One Youth component for our youngsters that are 16 and older and have some work experience behind them, it's terrific because it opens doors for career options for them. So it's really, it's not, I don't think, a simple one strategy that we're going to be able to do. And then maybe adding to all that is getting the word out, having shows like yours, having the media really promote the great work that's happening between a business and a young person, between a worksite and a young person, when that match works. And helping us to really spread the word that this is a win-win situation for everyone when our young people are working.
So what does it take to convince more businesses to hire more kids? Or is it a question of that, Don Fry, before we go back over to Ernest?
Well, I think we just have to continue to educate the business community about the importance of summer employment for young people, what it actually, the opportunities it provides to them, why it's significantly important for the growth of our city and for the for job growth in this as occurs, and to make sure we have a very qualified workforce. Businesses recognize that we have to have a qualified workforce, and they know that one way to do so is to provide young people with the opportunity to see what is involved with working, not just the actual skills or the technology that's involved with it, but also the soft skills that go along also with being employed. And this is something that we just have to keep talking about. It's something that we have to keep imploring our business community to show a commitment to. And I think they've done that in the past, but as we talked about the number of people involved, there's certainly a large number of people that we have to address and need to be trying to achieve.
This is a tweet came in. I just have to read it and see what you all think. It's a bit off topic, but not completely. Is it, how can the city reconcile enforcing a youth curfew with not having enough jobs to keep kids busy? Karen, you want to leap on that one as the director of Mayor's Office of Employment Development?
Well, I'm not quite sure how the two come together. I mean, you know, a curfew is evening hours. We're talking about, you know, how do we keep our young people actively engaged during the time they're out of school? And I do think, and I just want to reference again, I do think that Baltimore is a model for other cities that haven't done summer youth employment. You know, our mayor and our city council, and thanks as well to our governor, have put significant resources into helping us make sure that we do have opportunities for our kids to be actively engaged during the daylight hours when they're out of school.
I mean, I guess perhaps the spirit of the question might have been, I don't know, something I can't read into what people say, but maybe the spirit of the question was Don Fry, with this question, just an overall aspects of our youth policy in the city and how we make the connections.
Well, you know, I'm not really sure how the two are connected either. We certainly see in some of the challenges which brought about the need for a curfew law that the legislature or city council felt was appropriate. But as Karen indicated, I can't think of hardly any employment opportunity that we've been talking about, either through Youth Works or Hire One Youth, that the curfew law would be in conflict with.
So do we think there's any possibility of, Ernest Dorsey, that the official number of 3,600 kids without these jobs who applied are going to have employment? Is that going to happen?
Well, we're going to do our best to get as many young people employed. Our goal is to offer at least 5,200 young people employment opportunity this summer, and we're just about there. We do plan to have a second startup, which is July the 7th, and those young people will be part of the pool of kids who are on our waiting list to fill no-show slots, kids who may have to go to summer school. So we think we're going to get there.
So before we let you all go, we have to get information for now on our web to let people know how to contact for this information. 410-319-8888. Could I call in here before we go to our next group of panelists? Jason, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Mr. Steiner. Really quick, I commend you guys for the youth program and providing summer jobs, and I think that we can do a little bit more, and we should encourage all the industries within our city, science, health, engineering, technology, all of them to commit to summer jobs. Because if we can start training these young men now and young women now into the type of jobs that these businesses need, we create productive citizens. We create young men and women that can go to work locally, which is good for the environment because we're not using public transportation as much to travel outside of our city to go to work. We have a workforce that is ready, willing, and able to work. We know that there's a gap of 100,000 physicians that are going to be needed in the future. John Hopkins can easily do 100 internships and 100 summer jobs to encourage a lot of these young men and women to get into the medical science field, and which is a field that you don't have to worry about minimum wage. You don't have to worry about a living wage. These are jobs that when you have your degree and you're out in the scientific community and you're out in the health community, you're making a decent wage.
I'm sorry, I just had to jump in because we have another quick caller, and we do have to take a break to get other panelists in here, and I want to get a last comment from our guest. Sarah, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Thank you. My concern is that year after year, the city doesn't seem to have the funds for thousands of youth who are applying for these jobs. And I'm wondering, what is it that needs to happen to be able to allocate those funds?
And I guess part of that question might be, Karen Sitnick, some people call this a question of budget priorities, maybe more money should be put into this and as opposed to something else.
Well, you know, there's always going to be priorities that have to be, addressed. I think the city is doing a really excellent job, and the city puts in almost $1.6 million. Up until the year 2002, the city really didn't put any money in at all, and that first year in 2002 was $800,000. So the city continues to do what it can to allocate funds. But again, another part of this is we really look to our private sector, our foundations. Individuals, we do a very, very aggressive solicitation campaign, and I do want to take the opportunity to thank all of the businesses, the foundations, and folks who have made contributions so that we can place our younger 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds in more structured public sector jobs. So getting the word out and getting more contributions, I mean, the Weinberg Foundation gave us $120,000 this year to put young people into work. I think it's not just about what the city can do. I think the city is demonstrating that it is making a commitment, but how we use the city's contribution to leverage contributions from all other key stakeholders and even individuals who want to help put our kids to work. We have a vehicle for that.
Let's get one more quick question here. So a young person has called in. You're on the air.
Renee,
hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm about to comment about the youth works job.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that most of the young people that go and try to get youth works and aren't in it, they try to go look for other jobs, but then the other jobs deny them the job because of their age. Like, they're too young. Like, if a 13-year-old or 14-year-old tries to get the job, they don't get it because they don't think they're mature enough, or there's a baby and there's customers, or the clients won't take them seriously. And I don't really – I'm sorry. What was that?
That's okay. Finish your thought.
And I'd like to say that since I was 13, I tried to get a job. But, everywhere I would try to apply to, like, supermarkets or convenience stores, they denied me the job because of my age. Or I tried to call back. They wouldn't pick up, or they'd say that the manager's not in. They just blow me off.
So let me ask this before we have to take a break here. I appreciate that the comments from a young person. Very quickly, Don Fry, you'd like to respond in a closing thought from Ernest Dorsey.
Well, I guess I'd probably like to defer to Karen or Ernest on this, because the program that I'm involved with usually does not involve people of a 13 or 14-year-old age. But, I think that we're trying to find opportunities through the Youth Work Program for as many people as possible. And obviously there's so many people at all the various ages who are looking for employment. And as you've talked about earlier. There's just, unfortunately, a shortage of opportunities right now, and I just urge the business community and those of your listeners to step up and indicate a interest in this area so we can provide more opportunities for young people.
Regarding the age, according to the child labor law, young people cannot earn a wage until age 14. So they would not be able to get a wage employment opportunity at age 13, but we would encourage them to look for job shadowing opportunities, non-paid work experience type internships during the summer so they can get exposure and that may be a foot into the door so that when you get age 14 or 15, that employer remembers you.
Well, Ernest Dorsey, Assistant Director for Youth Services at the Mayor's Office of Employment Development, Karen Sitnick, who is Director of the Mayor's Office of Employment Development, and Don Fry, who is President and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee. Thank the three of you so much for taking this time with our listeners and look forward to having you all back as we continue our look at this. We'll bring another panel in of young people and people who are involved in young people's jobs to talk about their views on this as well. Thank you all three so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We're going to go to break here with Guns of Brixton by The Clash. Mick Jones of The Clash was born on this day in 1955. Stay with us. How you gonna come? Your hands on your head, on the trigger of your gun. When the law break in, how are you gonna go? Shot down on the pavement, or waiting in death row. You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you'll have to answer too. Said that was The Clash, Guns of Brixton. Today is the birthday of Mick Jones, born in 1955, who was part of The Clash. So we are here with our next group of panelists to talk about youth jobs in our community. We're joined by Sonia Merchant-Jones, who's chair of the Better Waverly Community Organization. Sonia, it's great to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you.
To have the studio.
It's my pleasure.
Maya Merchant's with us, who I take it is also the daughter or granddaughter?
Granddaughter.
Granddaughter. You never know in this day and age. Granddaughter who applied for work with YouthWorks in September. She'll be going to Dunbar Junior High. Good to have you here, Maya. Welcome.
Welcome. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. And Ralph Moore Jr. is with us. Ralph Moore, of course, has been on the show many times. He's coordinator of mentoring at Ex-Offender Mentoring Academy and Training Center. Good to see you, Ralph.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And do continue to join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. We're going to go back to the phones in just a minute because people are calling in. But let me ask you your perspective on this. This is what I was trying to say with the other panel. Originally, we had 11,000 kids sign in. Mm-hmm. Those ones who did sign in to say we want work. We're looking for work in the city. Of those, only 8,600 really applied because the rest couldn't either found jobs or most of them probably could not figure out how to get to Social Security or the ID they have because they don't have ID and their families don't know how to get it and there's mass confusion and they didn't get to the program. So, and 5,000 jobs were there. That means those kids are not going to have the jobs, but if you add on the kids who also signed up but couldn't get through, there could be over 6,000 children who really want jobs in the city that aren't going to get them, not counting the ones who didn't apply ever because they don't know how to do that and still want jobs. So, and Ralph Moore, let me just start with you, if I might, then we'll go to our other panelists, because you've been in this game and business of working with kids for a long time seen summer job programs over the last 40 years kind of wax and wane and more waning than anything else.
Well, I was just thinking out in the lobby, I'll bet we probably, you and I were the same general era. We probably never went a summer without a summer job, right?
I never went a summer without a job.
Right, me neither. And that's different now. And I think we've got to return to the expectation that every summer, every kid who wants to work ought to get a job. Now, this isn't a condemnation of anybody. This is a rallying cry, once again, to say, let's figure this out. Let's even think outside the box on this in some ways. In other words, kids in a decent job over the summer, getting paid, getting tired, is great public safety, right?
True.
They're with adults. They're under their care, so they're not going to be victimizers, and they're not going to be victims under those circumstances. And the more productive and positive and meaningful the job is, because I do remember the era when people leaned on brooms and jumped up and started sweeping when the supervisors showed up.
You know, the summer jobs for kids used to be.
That's what the program used to be like for many kids.
Right.
The first year we had summer youth workers, we had them doing artwork. I asked for 8 kids. They gave me 15. We did a mural over at St. Francis Academy on the back wall of the R.E. Michael building that commemorated the Oblate Sisters' 175th anniversary. We partnered with Baltimore Clay Works. They brought an artist in residence down from Philadelphia, a grouchy old guy. The kids learned how to do, you know, make mosaic tile, crack them up, and paste them. It took all summer, but what was wonderful, I'd wander into that room at one point, and the kids would be listening to hip-hop music while they're doing art. I'd go out, I'd come back later, they'd be listening to classical music, but they were just chilling. You know, they were out of the sun. And that's another thing that worries me now. The summers are different. It's hotter than it used to be, more intense. It's scarier than it used to be. You know, we've got violence on these streets sometimes. So we need to, at the very least, also be a safe haven for those kids, that they have somewhere indoors, again, under the care of adults. So let's look at it as public safety. Why don't we get the police to work with us, get some grants from wherever they get grants from, to fund summer jobs for youth?
We'll take a break.
I'm just getting started, but go on.
We have to take a break. We're going to come right back. And I want to pursue that, and also something one of our earlier callers, Jason, brought up about where some jobs could be and they're not where they could be. But I want to immediately come back. The number here is 410-319-8888. Asia, we're going to get your call. But we want to hear Maya's experience as soon as we return from this break. Stay with us.
Interested in donating your vehicle to an organization you believe in, like Public Radio WEAA? It's simple. We'll tow your vehicle, and you receive a tax deduction in support of the great music, talk, and cultural programming you enjoy on WEAA. You'll also receive a 1-year membership. The number is 1-866-789-8627 or weaa.org. Thanks. Support for WEAA is provided by Phase 10 Restaurant Lounge and Entertainment, located at 885 North Howard Street, offering American and Southern style fare for lunch and dinner, and daily live jazz and entertainment featuring WEAA's own Thursday Night Live every first Thursday and a gospel brunch every second Sunday. Dining information available at phase10.com or 410-462-2012. And members like you. Thank you.
Be informed. Get globally connected. Thursday evenings at 7, catch the Morgan State University program, A World of Education News. When it comes to the sciences, engineering, health, education, public policy, you'll hear faculty interviews about the progress of studies, research, student achievements, and global collaborations impacting Maryland, our region, and the world. All this coming directly from the schools and departments of Morgan State University. Thursday evening at 7 on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Working on a groovy thing, The Fifth Dimension. This is Billy Davis of the Fifth Dimension's birthday. He was born on this day in 1940. And we should be working on a groovy thing called Jobs for Our Young People. That's what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And we heard before we went to break from Ralph Moore, now coordinator of mentoring, ex-offender mentoring academy and training centers, longtime community activist working with young people in our community. Sonia Merchant-Jones is with us, chair of the Better Waverly Community Association. Maya Merchant is with us. Maya is her granddaughter, who is a teenager who applied for work with YouthWorks. In September, she'll be starting Dunbar Middle School.
High school.
Says it's junior high. So I know it wasn't junior high. They don't even have junior highs anymore.
Right.
What year is this? Dunbar High School. Okay. So, Maya, tell us your story about YouthWorks and you're going for a job.
Well, I wanted to join YouthWorks because originally my mother's on disability. So we wanted to join YouthWorks because it was going to help me get a laptop for high school because I know I would have to type a lot of papers, and getting a new laptop was mandatory, basically. So we got everything, Social Security, we had everything in check. And as a matter of fact, we were probably the first group to join the start the YouthWorks interviews. I was notified that I didn't get the job late, so I was not available to get any other jobs because all the deadlines were closed. Mind you, I had people emailing me, hey, I have a summer job, here, I have a summer job there. But I didn't want to sign up because if I got a job at YouthWorks, I would have to tell them no, and then they already closed the deadlines. So me getting the, I didn't get accepted letter, I was disappointed. Not only was I disappointed, I was a little angry because they did it too late. I had no way to get a job, and now it was like a what now for me. Earlier in the radio show, they said that it was another opening for a job on July 7th.
Right.
And nobody was notified. Mind you, they have my email address, my mother's email address, my mother's cell phone, my mother's home, and my grandmother's number. And they didn't notify me of nothing. Also, in the letter that they sent, they didn't say, hey, you can do this for the summer, you can intern here. They didn't give no other options. They just said, oh, well, we didn't get a job. So sorry. Mm-hmm. So.
Right, and they, when I asked the question last hour, they didn't have the direct information about how to contact the city or what they were going to do to contact young people on July 7th when these jobs that the kids did not take or new ones opened up were happening. So that would directly affect you and your work.
Yes.
Sonia, what are your thoughts about what's really happening here?
Well, I mean, you know, the bottom line at the end of the day, we're all living in critical times, hard to deal with. But when you know that kids are suffering from lack of resources, you need to kind of set up outreach to make certain that that happens. We don't utilize community associations who are in touch with people in the community who can match. Maybe there should be a different process. Maybe it should be kids who really have the need. Not saying that the need isn't across the board, but when you have 11,000 kids applying for jobs, I think that the city needs to revision how it disperses those jobs. And once upon a time, like Mr. Moore said, the city was the biggest employer of young people. They did things in the parks. They did things in the communities. And you don't see that anymore. I don't know why that stopped, but once upon a time, that's what you could do. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is there a real incentive to address the needs of the people who live in the inner city, their children? Crime and poverty is big business. What's the real incentive to get kids off the street, to give them jobs, to match people with success? I don't know. Again, crime and poverty are big business. Where's the incentive for people to really step it up like they did once upon a time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's kind of surprising that the city is putting in, what did they say, $1.6 million, which is about, 1,600 jobs. That's about a third of what they're doing. Again, I'm not knocking anybody. I think, though, we have to step the game up a whole lot more. This should be very, very important. We've got a young person sitting here in the studio who's very bright, very polite, very talented. When I met her, when they walked in, I said hello. She said hello and stuck out her hand, you know?
When I met her.
Right. She would make a great employee. She'd be good for any place where she worked. So Before we get off of this radio show, somebody call in and offer her a job. She needs a job, and you'll be getting a great employee. She's not asking for a handout. She's saying she'll work, and she'll work hard, and she'll be an asset to your company. And she's not alone. There are a lot of young people
right.
who can and will do that. Now, I think the city is trying hard. I think over the years, from my experience, a lot of the processes have improved. And I think, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when they got that stimulus money, they were able to employ somewhere between 7,000 and 9,000 kids. We just have to find that money now. We have to make a priority. I focused on two things over the years. One, for the little kids, keep the swimming pools open. Open them early and keep them open and make it so they can get in and out without, you know, paying an additional fee. And I think the mayor's improved on that. I think the pools are in great shape. That's public safety. Those kids are with adults.
Right.
They're able to keep, et cetera, and so forth. Now, we got to put some emphasis on the summer jobs thing. And everybody ought to be for that. Because in the business community, you're going to have kids who are going to buy school clothes at the end of the summer. They're still doing that. She's going to buy a computer, you know. So the business community, this is going to be turning over dollars in communities. So it's a business. It's a customer development. The banks are coming in now, and they're teaching kids how to open an account and how to budget. They're teaching financial literacy to the kids during the summer. So we're creating junior bankers. Okay, so banks, you step up and give us some more money. You know.
So I do want to get to a lot of people calling in, so I want to get these calls. But go ahead, please, first.
Oh, and I would also like to say, I'm not a stranger to the mayor. I have been to many of her public safety works, and I've asked questions about the safety of Baltimore City Public Schools. So me, with having that under my belt, I had more confidence saying I may have more opportunities to get a job. And I was
She even matched my ear with Nigel Ford, who's the fire chief, because Maya is going to study EMT at Dunbar. And she matched her right there on the spot. The mayor doesn't have a magic wand. She just doesn't. But I think that she has a far-reaching arm in this equation. So
let me open the phones here. There are a number of young people calling in. I think mm-hmm. they're 410-319-8888. And Asia, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Asia. And I just want to say that I feel like the government or overall, people aren't trying hard enough to give us jobs. Like, I feel as though youth work started off as just a way to keep us out of trouble and to give us jobs and to start us off in the workforce. But I feel as though, like, they didn't think that the youth as one would go out and get the job. And now that we did, I feel as though they're not putting enough money into it to give everyone a job. I feel as though, like, they just thinking as though we just out here doing anything, and I feel like they don't think that we care. And a lot of kids do. It's like a lot of kids have their own problems and their own situations where though they need the money, and I feel like the government just don't care.
Asia, I appreciate that thought, and I think that there's something to what Asia says. I mean, I think there's a question here that I was trying to ask earlier that didn't get really responded to, but we can come back to it with our city, which is, you know, somebody wrote in, we on one hand we can have a curfew against kids, but we can't put money into some youth employment. Is there a connection? They couldn't figure out the connection, but there is a connection. I mean, it depends where you want to put our money. We put close to $500,000 in a curfew center.
Mm-hmm.
Would that money be better spent to put another $500,000 in youth programs and maybe add to that so we can cover the jobs that need to get covered and to kind of push the other institutions in our city? The big nonprofit corporations like University of Maryland and Medical Center and Hopkins
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to open their doors for numbers of kids and start hiring them for the summer.
Mm-hmm,
or,
mm-hmm.
you know, the big corporations that we now have, why am I blocking on the name of it? Maybe they're already doing it. The big sportswear company.
Under Armour.
Thank you very much. It's less, I left me remember. My head just mine went away from it. But Under Armour. I mean, so the question is, there could be places where we could put young people to work. And I wonder how broad our vision is.
Well, see, I think they are doing some of that. I think Hopkins does that. I think Maryland, they do some. I think they need to do more. That's the point. And I think if we had more kids working, they wouldn't have to worry about the curfew so much because those kids would work. They'd get tired. They'd go home. sleep it off, and then come back so they could go to work and be ready for work the next day. So there is that sort of connection, too, practically speaking, that the more kids work, the more they'd have to worry about them wandering the streets late at night.
So before we come back to our young person on the panel and others, let's go back to the phones. We have another young person on the phone. I want an email that just came in from Jeff, 410-319-8888. And Bronte, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hi, Bronte. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. So I basically wanted to talk about, like, how much I do appreciate YouthWorks and how much it has helped me through the past three, four years, because I've been a constant youth worker constantly since 2013. So, 2010. So basically it has prepared me to work in the real job well and be prepared to accept the fact that, you know, things aren't always going to go your way. You know, there's always a bitter side to a situation, and you're not always going to get it your way. So maybe not getting the youth job the first time I applied, you know, gave me the sense that, okay, it's not going to always be good. But then the next 3 years I did get it, so it gave me the benefit of the doubt, saying that, okay, you can do something, you can keep trying, and, you know, to end up with a positive outcome. Now, the things that I don't like about YouthWorks is that so many young teens do apply and don't get it. Like, today I was just informed of the numbers that, you know, it was 8,600 people that apply, only 5,200 to get the job.
Right.
And that kind of hurts me in a way, because I have friends that I know who actually are going through things and they really need the money, and it's not available to them. Like, parents not having jobs, period, just being in group homes and foster care. And those people, in some situations, they may be lucky and get a decent home, but at the same time, most of these children are raising themselves, and their parents aren't really able to financially provide for them, and that's
right.
A sad situation. But I'm fortunate enough to have two parents in my home to raise me and financially take care of me. But the money does come in handy, because I'm a senior in high school, Western High School, and I'm about to graduate, and I'm planning on moving out. But I just want to learn how to be independent and, you know, survive on my own, and YouthWorks is helping me do that, so I do appreciate that. I don't have all bad things to say about YouthWorks. I do think it's a positive thing that, you know, we have against other states that doesn't have that, so I do like that about that.
Bronte, thanks so much. I appreciate all the thoughts you just brought to the table here. But let me I want to read this email, but Maya, you have a thought here.
I would like to agree with her, because I was adopted by my mother. So I'm raising a single household along with my grandmother. She helps a lot as well. So having the job will benefit a lot. Not only am I in, like, a situation, so are my friends. Like, all my friends are looking for my best friend, Tiana. She wants a laptop. My cousin, Morgan, she wants to get new stuff for high school, because the uniforms that we have to buy, that's a lot of money as well. And we're living in times where we don't have, like, a lot of money. So getting a job we're not just going to go spend it willy-nilly. Hey, let's go to the mall, buy this. We're going to spend it on something we actually need for high school.
So. What you're saying here is, I think, very critical, what both of you just said, and we'll go back to the phones here. Renee, the young woman who called it earlier, is called back in. We'll hear what she has to say about the curfew. She wants to make a comment, but we'll get to that in a moment. But I think what you're saying is important, because people don't realize that the young people who are looking for work this summer are looking for work because they really do want to get experience, and they need the money. It's not like a laptop is a luxury.
Right.
A laptop is a working tool in college. It's like in high school. It's like we didn't need them in high school. Mm-hmm. They didn't exist.
Right.
You know, we had pencils and papers and typewriters at home. You know what I'm saying? We didn't need it, but you do. And so this is, and I think that we got to understand this.
And it's required. The schools require it without taking into consideration a family's economic situation. I mean, as a community leader, I see it all the time. Kids just wanting simple things.
But and also, if a kid wants to take a few of their hard-earned dollars and go to the movies or buy a CD, there's nothing wrong with that.
Because they're not taking it out of the store.
It's their
hard-earned
money.
They're buying
it. Right.
Exactly.
And they feel good about that.
Exactly. I mean,
me too.
And there were summer jobs. When we were younger, we were talking about that. There was a place called Bethlehem Steel that hired hundreds of teenagers in high school.
That's right.
For
my
jobs.
Dad worked there 50 years.
Right. So
right.
At good wages. At good wages.
Yes.
You worked at food fair as a produce clerk on whatever.
Right.
Yes.
So there were jobs that existed.
Right.
Yes, they did. Yes.
So the Jeff Singer has written, and then we'll go back to the phones. Jeff wrote in, first of all, the title of his email is Ralph Moore is a True Baltimore Hero.
Hi, Jeff. is that what he said?
Yes,
oh,
he
okay,
did say that.
No. Okay.
So, but he wrote in seriously, not that that wasn't serious. that didn't come out right. That perhaps he could tell us how many jobs the city could have provided with the $250,000 Patarakis was just given. And with the $450,000, they built a fence to keep veterans out of the War Memorial Building. And, of course, Michael Beatty's recent $400 million gift could employ all of Baltimore's youth. So what he's basically saying is here, the two men he mentioned are multimillionaires who are developers who got largesse from the city. Mm-hmm. Did they really need it?
Mm-hmm.
And that do we need to put a fence around, spend $500,000 almost on a fence around the War Memorial because we wanted to keep many veterans who are homeless now from sleeping on the steps of the Rome Memorial. So these are great questions to ask, I think.
Right. And it's clearly an issue about priorities. And, okay, if you need a fence around the War Memorial Building, which I would strongly disagree with, that can't be a higher priority than putting kids to work. If you need to help a multimillionaire, near billionaire, that can't be a greater priority than putting this
Maya
young lady
and
to work.
Renee and everybody else was called
to work.
In,
I mean, you know,
work.
So right. If it's a real prioritizing, the kids have to come first. We're talking about the future here. So they have to have what they need to keep moving on and moving up, and they have to feel like they're full citizens in this city, and we have to, as adults, do everything we absolutely can to help them.
Mr. Patarakis has that big bakery down there.
You can hire some people for the summer.
Absolutely, Mr. Patarakis.
Hire some kids, right?
There's not a long history of hiring African-Americans at a bakery.
Oh,
let me just put that on the table as well. But I think that doesn't preclude changing things and hiring.
We can always change.
We can always change.
Right. Yeah.
Always absolutely,
change.
And we must.
Let's go back to the phone. See another young person. I think is called in 410-319-8888. I actually think it's Renee who called in earlier. Renee, what's your second comment?
It's about the teen curfew and how kind of ironic it is to have such an early curfew for people that you expect to have responsibilities and other things. And even if they had youth works, I can understand that if they had a work. Right, and then afterwards they had another job because some kids actually help their parents pay bills and actually trying to support themselves and maybe even younger siblings. And then you have a curfew on them, and the MTA system isn't really reliable to get home before 9 or 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's also kind of ambiguous because the police, there's not enough to monitor kids, and this, I understand it's a safety thing, but and it kind of makes sense if you put it into like on a piece of paper. But in reality, it's more like it's a brush off to say like, oh, let's just put these in the holding cell until their parents come. But I can tell you right now, parents most likely who are actually not good parents,
mm-hmm.
they won't come because they feel like, oh, they left that on their own accord. They should take care of it themselves. I have no say in it at all. And let's say we're forgetting that the police are people, too, so that they also have to take care of their jobs. So we all know that police have quotas. If they actually take kids off the street and try to take them there, it's kind of pointless and counterproductive. If you're actually trying to make them safe, do constant patrolling, like they said they were going to do, but I live in a place where they said they were going to do it, and they don't. They're hardly ever around.
Renee, I mean, we'll have to get you as a guest on the show one day soon to come sit in the studio with us, because what you're saying is, I mean, very clear thinking and articulate and very clear about what you are saying about what situations, I think you're right. We need to have new conversations about the curfew and youth period in this city. And my producer is suggesting we need to have a conversation on this show just about youth in the city and what our priorities are and how we should make them that. So what are your thoughts about Maya? And then come back to Ralph, your thoughts once you just heard Renee say.
I totally agree with what she just said, because it's many people out, well, it's many kids that's out on the street. I mean, they're doing God knows what. So I know a lot of people who signed up for the jobs. Then they want to have a job. They can't get a job. So they say, okay, well, I'm going to act up. The mayor is constantly saying, well, if you want to act up, go to a zoo. That's one time what she said.
She said a farm.
A farm or a zoo.
She
okay.
said a farm, right?
Go to a farm. But how, I mean, we can't, it's no way to do anything because you can't get a job. Every time they go somewhere, they either it causing a disruption. So what do they do now? I mean, the only option left is there. I mean, be them. I mean, they're not raising the parents. Some of the parents are very young, and the parents are acting out of order. So the kids say, let's act out of order, because that's what they know. So if they don't have a job to tell them what to do, the jobs have adults help them go to the right path. And the parents.
Like Mr. Moore and what he does.
Yes, like Mr. Yeah, Moore. And
like he guides kids who, you know, may not have that support at home. And, you know, that's why I believe outreach is so important, because once upon a time, it was the community that pitched in to help raise children. And now we are falling so far away from that. Thank goodness for Mr. Moore.
Well, you're very kind. We have a summer peace camp that we've run for many years, and we have youth workers there. When I was at St. Francis running the community center, we had to help kids with the applications. We had to help them make sure that they had the pieces of paper that they needed.
Right.
We had to make sure that we made copies, because they were charging for copies when you go to the rec center. And everybody, you know, and I'm not knocking it. I think things are improving to some extent. But we do need a larger pie. Mm-hmm. We need more money coming from all different kinds of sources. And I know money is tight to some extent, but money is flowing in some directions that they certainly don't need to be. So this has to be a much higher priority. And we can't wait until late spring to realize that we've got thousands of kids who want to work. This should be a priority all year round. And we got to get the churches. We're talking about, $1,000 a kid,
right?
So the churches should all cough up one job for each kid. The businesses cough
they can
up.
They afford it.
Huh?
They can afford it.
Churches, yeah.
Churches, synagogues, and mosques.
Right.
Say,
that's what I mean. I'm speaking generically, but everybody. Right.
Yeah.
Come up with $1,000. This is important. You wanted to say something? I'm sorry.
We have like a minute and a half left. So.
Well, in elementary school, it was this place called J.A. Bistown where they took us to, it was like workforces, where they was like UPS, and they was teaching us how to write checks, how to work, how to be a CEO, how to be a CFO.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, doing that, it gave me experience. So some kids may not be experienced, but I know some kids from Abiston are very experienced, and could, because J.A. Bistown was not only a fun experience, it was an education experience at
school?
That. Abiston Elementary.
Okay. All right. So, first of all, I thank you, Maya Merchant. I think it was wonderful to have you on the program here with us, and I want to wish you luck at Dunbar coming up for your high school coming up this year.
Yes.
And I think you are also very lucky to have your grandmother, mother, Sonia Merchant Jones, and your mom, who have built a very strong family around you to help get you to the place you are. And I think that is really critical. I want to thank all the young people for calling in, who I didn't know we were going to call in today, who told us their stories. And I think this leads us to thinking more we have to talk about with our young people about where to go and have their voices on the air here, which you try to do. And my old friend Ralph Moore, it's good to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for
thanks for having
us
me
as well. So we have a lot more to talk about here, and I want to appreciate everybody who joined us today as we look at the youth works for our young people, which is a very critical topic for conversation here on our radio program. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers are Andre Melton. Our interns are Alex Boston, Sienna Greaves, and Sam Sapper. To hear the show again and podcast all of our past shows, find out information about our guests and what they were talking about, what they put on the web by going to our website, steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes, and just go right there and pull anything down you want. We're going to hear with Rush, by Big Audio Dynamite. Mick Jones, the Big Audio Dynamite, was born on this day in 1955. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Rush for a change of atmosphere. A cargo or so I get in. Gotta get myself right out of here. Situation now.